So our next presenter is, his name, and tell me, and I don't know if I'm saying your last name right, is Robert Covicier. And he is from the Human Rights Commission. I think you're the executive director, if I read it correctly. And William Craig told me several months ago that you absolutely needed to speak at our convention. And honestly, I have been around a while and I have heard very little about the Human Rights Commission. I mean, it seems self-explanatory, but I think it's really important for all of us to know a little more about it because, you know, there may come at a time when we feel like we have to contact the Human Rights Commission for some reason in our lives. So, Robert, thank you so much for being here. And take it away.
Well, I'm very pleased to be here. And you almost completely nailed my last name. It's pronounced Corbusier. And I do go by Rob.
Okay.
So
got it.
I am the executive director. I personally don't think that the Human Rights Commission is self-explanatory. In fact, I personally can't stand the name. A lot of people think that as the Human Rights Commission, you know, we have something to do with like the International Treaty on Human Rights or the International Convention on Human Rights. And we'll get people that will contact us and complain about, you know, well, don't they have a human right to clean air and clean water and access to food? And it's like, well, in the broader scope of things, maybe those are all, in fact, human rights, but we really are a civil rights enforcement agency. We are the oldest of the agencies of our kind. We were formally created in 1963, and therefore we actually predate the Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. And in one way or another, every other state agency, whether it's titled as a human rights agency, and roughly half the states still have the name human rights in their name, others call themselves an equal rights agency or civil rights agency, something like that. They've all been one way or the other shaped by what Alaska's legislature did. And our statute actually originated even before that, goes back to Elizabeth Peratrovich and her lobbying the Alaska legislature to provide a public accommodation non-discrimination statute in a lot for Alaska law. And that was the first time, in the, since essentially the end of the Civil War. And there were a lot of states that took obviously civil rights actions at the end of the Civil War, but it was the first time in kind of modern history that a state had stepped back and said, all right, we need to provide additional, non-discrimination provisions in state law. All right. So what are we? The agency is a quasi-judicial independent state agency. We consist of 7 volunteer commissioners who are appointed by the governor in 5-year rotating seats subject to legislative confirmation. And the idea behind that is that because the agency does have jurisdiction to investigate the executive branch, including the governor, we've got jurisdiction to investigate the legislators. We have jurisdiction to investigate the court system. In addition to all private employers in the state, almost all private employers in the state, we don't have jurisdiction over nonprofit employers. You don't want the agency to become politicized and be used as a political sword against your political enemies. But administratively, the legislature at the time believed that we were of such importance that we needed to be administratively located in the office of the governor. But I do not report to the office, to the governor himself. I report to these 7 commissioners. So those are, as of right now, our commissioners are William Craig of Sitka, Kyle Foster, who is of Anchorage, but has family ties to Sandpoint, Rebecca Carrillo of Juneau, and Jesse Ruffridge is our newest commissioner from Kenai. There are currently 3 vacancies on the commission due to some resignations that took place earlier this year. Our function is twofold. Number one, we follow a law enforcement type model in our taking complaints from victims of discrimination and investigating those complaints and then taking those complaints to trial in kind of a prosecutorial function in the Office of Administrative Hearings. So our 5 subject matter jurisdictional areas are employment, places of public accommodation, the sale and rental of real property, and credit and financing, as well as government practices. So if you are discriminated against, if an Alaskan is discriminated against or a non-Alaskan is discriminated against based on their status and as a member of a protected class within one of those 5 areas, that person can complain to the Human Rights Commission and we can step in and do an investigation and remedy it. So what are those protected classes? Those are the ones that we hear about, you know, going back from like, you know, civics lessons. And obviously when I was in law school, those are age, race, sex, which now is expanded to include sexual orientation and gender identity based on a recent U.S. Supreme Court decision. Disability, including mental and physical disability, color, national origin, marital status, changes in marital status, and pregnancy or parenthood. Our basic complaint, oh, and of course we do outreach, which this is a component of that. The Alaska Supreme Court has definitely articulated that we are to be more than just a complaint taking agency. We are supposed to be out trying to prevent discrimination as well by educating the public. And I look at that as kind of a two-pronged approach as well. I mean, to generate cases that actually impact the bottom line for our agency's budget, because we have a contract with the EEOC that brings in some federal receipts for the employment discrimination cases that we can resolve. So we want to be reaching out to potential, especially employees who are potential victims of discrimination. And in addition, we also want to be trying to prevent discrimination by reaching out to employers, to businesses, to places of public accommodation, to make them aware of things like, hey, within the bar industry, we have noticed an uptick in cases associated with service animals and people being denied entrance or access with service animals. And so I want to reach out to the, probably using CHAR, but reach out to the restaurant, hotel, cabaret association, to let them know, look, you know, this is an educational opportunity for you guys to avoid drawing a complaint from the Human Rights Commission. All right. So what is our complaint process? So if you think you're a victim of discrimination, call our intake line. And I should have that memorized, but I admit I don't end up calling it very often. The toll-free number is 1-800-478-4692. And that's 1-800-478-4692. And you'd speak with one of our on-duty intake investigators. And they are trained to try and determine from the outset if this is a valid jurisdictional case. It has to be within 300 days. So there is kind of a type of statute of limitations associated with it. But if you articulate a valid jurisdictional case for us, we'll then move that into the complaint phase. And the investigator, him or herself, will actually draft the complaint for the complainant. And if the complainant elects to sign that, and we can do those remotely, then the case moves into the investigation phase. At the end of the investigation, we have to make a determination that there either is substantial evidence of discrimination or there's no substantial evidence of discrimination. And I'll be honest, the bulk of our cases end up being employment-related cases. And usually it's someone is fired, and they think that there has to be something other than their performance-related issue that caused them to be fired. And that's just kind of a natural human reaction, in my opinion. But often then the employers do have a pretty well-documented reason for whatever the adverse employment action was. And if they can provide to us a non-discriminatory reason for the action, then 9 times out of 10, we'll end up with a no substantial evidence determination. And a complainant can at that point take that case to an appeal directly to the Superior Court. And I mean, from my standpoint, I always hope that the Superior Court affirms our record and what we did. But for those cases where there is substantial evidence of discrimination, that's where we dig in. Once we've issued that determination, and all of this process is still confidential. Once we've issued that determination, we go into what's called a conciliation phase. And that's where we try and remedy the harm without having to make it public. Again, particularly with employment cases, we're not here from the outset to be a punitive agency. We just want to set everybody on the right course again. And so if we can settle the case, if we can conciliate the case, you know, at that stage and remedy the harm and, you know, educate the employer, make sure the employer, whoever the respondent is, has a good set of policies in place and has paid, if there is a monetary component, paid the complainant to compensatory damages. We only have a make whole relief authority in our statute. Then great. Then we will close the case and we've done our job. But sometimes respondents also dig in their heels and say, you know, insist they didn't do anything wrong, in which case we will go ahead and file an accusation and we move it into a trial phase. And we are essentially a full-fledged prosecutorial litigation-oriented small law firm. We've got attorneys, we've got a paralegal, we've got law assistants, and we go do full-blown litigation in front of the Office of Administrative Hearings. And at the end of that, we do a trial. It's a non-jury trial, but it's still a trial. At that point, once, assuming we win the trial, the administrative law judge issues a written decision, which is then presented directly to those seven volunteer commissioners. And that is when they meet in their quasi-judicial function with the assistance of an assistant attorney general, so that they have counsel present. And generally, they adopt the administrative law judge's written order. And they have certainly have the authority to modify that, so long as they modify the order within the confines of what is allowed under law. And that's the end of the complaint process. Of course, then there's an opportunity, you know, if a respondent feels still strongly, they can also then appeal that decision, go back into the superior court. The commissioners themselves meet somewhat regularly, usually 3 to 4 times a year, to set policy, provide overall guidance to myself and the rest of the administrative staff, professional staff, to look at statutory changes. They don't have the authority themselves to change the statute. They're not members of the legislature. But one of the functions of the commission is to provide suggestions on statutory changes. We do have regulatory authority. And there actually is a regulation change that is currently before the commission that I expect that they will be adopting next week. Speaking of that, the next commission meeting is October 20th. It is a fairly short agenda. They are going to be primarily kind of reorganizing and electing an interim chairperson and vice chairperson, pending the appointment of 3 additional commissioners, at which point they'll then elect their regular chairperson and vice chairperson. One thing that may be of particular interest to this group, though, is at the suggestion of Commissioner William Craig, the commissioners are going to be considering a resolution to support a disability access policy for the blind and visually impaired for state websites. The state's ADA coordinator, David Newman, put together a little bit of a group earlier this year to look at access issues. And I kind of thrust myself into that group, to admittedly be a little bit of the specter of litigation. But they came up with what in my opinion is a pretty great, policy that is making its way up through the state government for, hopefully consideration by the governor, to make it a formal state policy. Commissioner Craig has asked the other commissioners to consider, passing a resolution to formally support that initiative. All right. I admit I am a lawyer and I like the sound of my own voice and I can talk for hours. So I've only got 20 minutes and I would promise myself that I would save a few minutes for question and answers. So I've got 2 minutes left. Go.
So talk a little bit about, this is Bonnie, and my question is, can you talk a little bit about what it takes to get on that, as a commission, become a commissioner?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So these are just public seats. There's no minimum requirement. There's no regional requirement. From what I've seen, they do try to spread out statewide so that we don't have, you know, just a group of commissioners that are all from Anchorage all the time. But you just apply to the governor's office. You get on the state website. You go to the boards and commissions section of the governor's website, and there's an application process.
Okay.
Generally, this consists of, you know, submitting your interest and maybe a resume and a letter of intent to want to be on either this commission or any commission. And then you'll go through a little bit of a screening process and the director of boards and commissions does his or her thing and then submits names up for the governor's consideration. Assuming that the governor picks a person, there is still, they become effective immediately, but there is still the legislative confirmation process. And so that does require going through a series of hearings in front of the Alaska legislature the following session.
About how long does that take? I mean, the hearings, is it like a day, a couple days? Separated by weeks?
Yeah, it can be separated by weeks because it's up to the individual committees of jurisdiction to decide. I mean, there's both, you got to go through both a House hearing process as well as a Senate hearing process. Mm-hmm. And then they meet in joint session, usually toward the end of the session. Mm-hmm. and kind of do an en masse consideration of all of the governor's appointees. So it's not just the Human Rights Commission. It's like all other 80 or whatever some odd boards and commissions there are, along with if there's any new cabinet members. I mean, that's all kind of done at the same time.
Right. And I had been on the SVRC, the State Vocational Rehabilitation Council, and that is, it doesn't have to go through the legislature, I don't think. I didn't have to do that, but I think it's the same sort of thing. It's a committee.
And not all of the boards and commissions require legislative confirmation.
Okay.
But I think because of the independence this agency has, mm-hmm. as well as its it's because of its quasi-judicial function, they do require the appointees to go through the legislative confirmation.
Oh, there, and there
anyway,
is
one. It's in statute, so.
Uh-huh. So there's one more quick question. Do you have any idea about how many cases you take to court in 1 year?
Take to court? It varies anywhere from zero to four. I don't think we've ever done more than four trials in a single year. I will tell you that I have a litigation background. I used to be a district attorney. The attorney I hired a year ago also has a strong litigation background. She used to be a DA, and the guy I just hired started on Monday, has done hundreds of trials in his 25 year career as an attorney, mostly in family practice, but he's done the gamut of cases. I've made it very clear to the Bar Association and to the employment bar in particular that we're going to be taking a much more litigation focused standpoint, but that also means that we're not going to blink if we go to trial.
Right.
And the other attorneys know that. Mm-hmm. And we're government employees, so we get paid exactly the same whether we settle the case or whether we go to trial. Mm-hmm. And Helen Keoki and I all actually genuinely like going to trial. Mm-hmm. And so far since we've been here, all of the cases have ended up settling.
And how many do you think that is in a year? I mean, do you see lots of them? I'm trying to even get a picture of how many people actually are aware that they can bring cases to you and stuff like that. And
so I'd have to look at our stats from last year, which are in our annual report, which is also online in a PDF. But I mean, our inquiry numbers will be in the, you know, hundreds or thousands.
Wow.
Inquiry includes people calling up and saying, hey, can you protect me from the satellites overhead with my tinfoil hat? It includes people calling up and saying, you know, my neighbor is smoking in my apartment below me, and so I can't breathe. Can you do something about that? And it's not something we can do anything about. So I'd say that boils down into, you know, a couple hundred actual jurisdictional complaints. And sometimes we'll have a complaint, but the person doesn't, they decide they just, for whatever reason, don't want to take it forward. Maybe they want to keep it private. They don't want to be public about this. And we have a confidential process, but if we end up going to trial, at the point we file an accusation, it becomes public. So yeah, I mean, thousands, hundreds and low thousands of inquiries boil down to, you know, a couple hundred complaints, and then we resolve, maybe
all but a couple,
30 or so end up, the rest of them end up being no substantial evidence of discrimination. Mm-hmm. And so we only end up having, you know, a trial caseload that's fairly small.
Right. Any other questions? Anyone? Well, Robert, thank you very much for being here. And, this is new news to me. And I think it's really good for us to be aware of different kinds of agencies and the things that they do to protect our rights. And thank you again for coming.
Absolutely. And again, I would encourage all of you to contact the commission. You know, if obviously this is a visually impaired group, I mean, if you've got a service dog, you've got a service animal, and you've got problems and people aren't respecting that, that's something we can help you with. You know, we can essentially force a place of public accommodation to change their policy and educate them about the law. But we've got to know about those things. And if you're not contacting us, there's nothing I can do about it. Mm-hmm. And I'd be happy to come and speak with you guys again in the future.
Sure. Absolutely. We will definitely keep that in mind. Thank you again so much.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Take care.